Welcome to Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time. For women who have walked away from faith, the challenges are often overwhelming, isolated, abandoned by family, misunderstood by partners, ostracized by friends, shamed for thinking critically, cursed for speaking out, subdued by the patriarchy. Thank you for joining us today as we provide a platform for women to speak up, to speak out, and to share their stories, because their stories count. Their stories matter. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I have the extreme privilege of talking to Tracy of Godless Mama. How are you doing today, Tracy?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So we finally get to connect. We've been trying this for like months, it seems, and we've had one issue or another getting in our way.
Yeah, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
I don't think that's completely true. Maybe the last time, but I'm pretty sure I was sick or something happened. You know, so we can both take responsibility there, I suppose.
But we're here now. But
we're here, and it's great to connect. I really don't know much of your story or much about how you got started with the Godless Mama platform, but I believe I was introduced to you on Facebook, and a friend of a friend, I think, liked something that you wrote or something you posted, and I liked your page, and you've been inspirational to me, I don't know, the last few years and what you share. So I wanted to say thank you for using your voice as a beacon of light and good in the world.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. I hear a lot of the opposite as well.
So. Really?
Oh, yeah. Just today I was told that I'm an insane, he said a lunatic, I think.
Oh my
God. A lunatic extremist, yeah.
Oh, and so are those people that are calling you names like that, do they tend to be like fundamentalist Christian folks?
Oh, it runs the gamut.
Okay.
I used to post, I started the page, and for the first probably for the first couple of years that I ran the page, it was really, my focus was on atheism and secularism.
Hmm.
And then I got kind of disenchanted with movement atheism.
Amen.
I was really disenchanted with a lot of, you know, sort of the figureheads and a lot of the people that were sort of rising to the top, you know, in the podcasting scene, and it just wasn't for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So my focus has changed. So I really post a lot now about politics and feminism, and a lot of random other stuff. You know, parenting stuff. Mm-hmm. Something that's an issue that's close to my heart is childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to do some education on issues around trauma, especially childhood trauma,
mm-hmm.
Science, and then just in a lot of ways, it's like a journal for me.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing those private moments, those journal pieces with the world. You know, you give a voice, a good, nice, clear, articulate voice for those of us that don't always feel confident doing so, or even know how to necessarily put the words together to express what it is we're feeling.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
Now tell me, so you did not grow up in a family that had any sort of religious backing, correct?
That is correct. My mother grew up Catholic.
Hmm.
Math and Latin every day.
Oh my gosh, Courtney.
And yes. And she said she had really wanted to raise my sister and me in the church, but the local priest had said something nasty to her, like, you know, well, if you're not going to church, then you're setting a really bad example for them. And she was like, well, I'll show you. And she didn't send us either. And I told her just recently, I said, that's the best thing. I think that's the best thing that you and my father ever did for me, was not raising me with religion. Yeah. So we never went to church. We went on Christmas Eve every year until I was about 10, maybe. And then after that, it was nothing.
And was that about
and
the
then
time? Your mom, the priest said to your mom that she should be showing up at church too? Or what was the reason why at 10?
No, it might have been around that time. All my friends, I grew up in a town with a large French Canadian population. So everybody was Catholic. All my friends were Catholic, and they were all going to CCD, which I guess is catechism.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Sounds right.
The education that Catholic kids get before they get confirmed.
Right.
Where they have their first communion, that kind of thing. So it might have been right around that time. But my father was Protestant, but you know, he never took us anywhere. So we went to a Catholic church on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And I always found it boring and vaguely creepy. Because I still find the language of church, I don't know, maybe I'm just associating it with what the way I felt when I was a kid, but it was always, you know, the church is kind of dark and they were saying all this stuff, but I had no idea what they were talking about. And there was a lot of talk about blood and then you had to shake hands with people that you didn't know. And that always creeped me out. I just never liked it. And I never got anything out of it. And so by the time I was, you know, maybe a sophomore in high school, that was when I started thinking, hey, God seems really unlikely to me. And so probably for about the next 15 years, I called myself agnostic.
Okay.
Because I thought that was the correct term for it seems unlikely, but I can't prove it. And then when around the time I turned 30, I thought, you know, the probability is close enough to zero to effectively be zero. So I might as well just, you know, say what I am. We're all probably pretty safe to behave as if there is no such thing as God. And that's when I started calling myself an atheist.
Okay. Interesting. And so your community at that time, like, were you surrounded by other people that were kind of working through these sorts of things as well? Or was it just kind of like a steady progression for you of trying to figure out what it was you believed to be true about the world?
I think it was really more of a personal thing. I live in an area of the country that's fairly non-religious, and maybe there's a difference because where I am, there are more Catholics. So it's not like an evangelical area.
Right.
I don't know if that makes a difference, that the Catholics aren't out there proselytizing to the same degree. So I'm not sure if that's part of it. And also just sort of the area, the state where I live, the culture is kind of like, just leave me alone and mind your own business. So people tend to not get in other people's business about that kind of thing, which is also, I'm very fortunate to be in that kind of an area. I can't imagine trying to be an atheist in some place like, you know, Lubbock, Texas, or, you know, or, you know, Alabama or something. Right. It must be really hard.
Yeah.
You know, I was always conscious of being the only one in my peer group who was of the mindset that this just doesn't make sense and it's probably all
bullshit.
Untrue. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And would you have conversations with those peers, or was it more of you would listen to them talk and just kind of think to yourself, I don't believe this to be true?
I think a combination.
I
think a combination of it is sometimes I would listen to people talk to try just to try to understand, because you know, even and the older I get, the stranger religious belief is to me. So it's to me, it's like it's this very strange phenomenon. So sometimes I would listen to people talk. Almost in fascination because I just don't understand it. And depending on, you know, my comfort level with the people that I was with, you know, how teenagers are, we were like, what? Like, that's bullshit. That makes no sense. How can you think that?
I've been out of, you know, like fully out for maybe like 4 years where I said the word atheist to myself, right? Where I acknowledge the fact that after years of study and not necessarily putting all the pieces together, you know, and then a friend asked me out at lunch one time, like, so Leah, what is it that you believe today? And I had to like stop for a moment and like kind of like put all those puzzle pieces together and actually sit and think about that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't believe any of it is true. I don't, what? I was like, wow. And so probably about 4 years ago that happened for me. And like you said, like as the years have gone by, like when I look into religion, like for example, my husband's family is uber conservatively Catholic. So they're kind of the evangelical type Trump supporting pro-life, you know, anti-LGBTQ Catholics. And, you know, they're pro-Trump and they're pro-gun and they're pro- ultrasounds while you're pregnant before an abortion. And like, when I just look at their theology, and we're not even, I didn't even mention, right? Like the Catholic Church and all of the scandals. I mean, the Buffalo Diocese, they just lost their bishop. There's a new pedophile scandal, you know, every couple of hours, it seems, each and every day coming out of the Catholic Church. And it's so flabbergasting to me that there are still people that sit in those pews, right, and listen to the priests preach their stuff and, you know, and continue to give them monies to support the organization. And so, like, it's hard for me to believe some days that I bought in to the narrative, you know, hook, line, and sinker for so long. Because now I can't even imagine entering back in and swallowing the pill again, you know? So yeah, for you who never did swallow the pill, for you, it must be completely foreign. And
it really is very, yeah, it's just very strange. Because as an outsider, you know, so I'm a complete outsider,
right,
looking in. It just seems so manifestly absurd. There's so many things that if you just scratch the surface just a little bit, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, why so many religious people, I think, don't scratch the surface.
Yeah, right.
I think a lot of them are aware that it won't hold up.
Yeah. And like, there's that scare tactic, right, taught by the church, that if you dare to doubt or you dare to question the teachings of scripture or your pastor, you know, that you're just opening a door for Satan to come in and kind of take over your mind. So they have all of these built-in ways to keep you closeted, to keep you in your little bubble, so that you don't ask the questions and you don't think and start to contemplate what it is they're teaching you about how life works. Yeah, it's such an interesting, frustrating.
Did you grow up Catholic?
I did not. I grew up actually in a secular household, surprisingly. My mom and dad were kind of like hippies, but my dad came from a family of extreme, devoutly Southern Baptist home church people. And so we spent a lot of time with my grandparents. You know, they lived on a farm and I had aunts that were close to my age. And so we would always spend time with them, working in the gardens. And so from an early age, I received this message that I wasn't good enough. You know, this shame-filled message that, Leah, you need to turn from your wicked ways, right? Whatever wicked ways a 5, 7, 10, 12-year-old girl can have, and turn to God. And so I grew up with this sense of shame from the exposure I had to religion in my grandparents' house. And also I would go like to vacation Bible schools, you know, with my aunts during the summer. And I would go to these religious convocation retreat week long getaways where you're singing songs and worshiping Jesus and listening to preachers and teachers, you know, 12 hours, 16 hours a day. So it came at me from an early age, but I didn't choose it until I was actually a freshman in college. And then the shame just got to me, you know, the sex before marriage that I was having. And I actually got a DUI my freshman year of college. And I just felt like a complete and total piece of shit, worthless, you know, sinful piece of shit. And I cried out to Jesus and said, Jesus, if you're there, I promise I will follow you all the days of my life. And during that stress-filled time, it seemed like he kind of held my heart and, you know, comforted me during those difficult times and became a friend to me. You know, it didn't hurt that I was also attending a Christian college at the time, just by chance. So I was surrounded by, you know, roommates and coaches and professors who all profess Christianity to me. So it's just, it's like all of these, the stars had to align, I feel like, you know, for me to be able to say, yes, I choose you, God of the Christian world. But gosh, what a deep regret I have, you know, today, all these years later. But
I can't imagine telling a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old that she has wicked ways.
I know. Heart.
How can a child that young be wicked?
I know. And yet that's what we're taught in the church, you know, that you're born wicked, right? That what's the teaching of the Catholic Church? It's the I can't think of the proper term, but you're born sinful. And that's why you need to be baptized, you know, as an infant.
Original sin?
Yeah, original sin. I mean, yeah. And like, I mean, you're a mom, right? I'm a mom. Like, I remember having my children and looking at these precious little babes. And like, for me, you know, I was a Christian when they were born and just kind of thinking like, they sure don't seem sinful and evil and horrid. You know, and for you, there was something I read in your bio on your website that talked about, you know, you as a parent and that you don't want the society, the cultural norms here to affect how your kid is brought up and what she's brought up to believe to be true about the world. So you have how many kids, Tracy?
I have just the one.
Okay, just the one.
I have one. She's 11.
Okay.
And she is actually the reason why I started getting involved in movement atheism online 8 or 9 years ago.
Hmm.
Because I, at that moment, I felt like organized religion is the biggest threat to civilization
Wow.
right now. I still think it's on the short list.
Okay.
And, you know, I know now that I was an anti-theist even before I was an atheist, before I knew what an anti-theist was, because I've always believed that organized religion was bad news.
Interesting.
You know, institutional religion is a force for evil.
Right.
It's just a corporation that is interested in sustaining itself. It's not interested in serving any greater purpose, but it's just out to perpetuate itself and protect itself.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely 100% true.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can believe whatever nonsense they want to believe, but secularism, you know, is fighting for secularism and getting religion out of public policy in all forms.
Yes.
Because a huge amount, you know, in this country and all over the world, I can't put a number on it, but certainly a substantial percentage of bad public policy is rooted in religious beliefs.
Yeah, right.
And also the way all organized religion views women.
Yeah, amen. Yeah.
You know, if you take the abortion issue, for example, and of course, you know, yes, it is a health issue, and it is a bodily autonomy issue, and it has real consequences for women's lives and their health, and but it's also about whether or not women are human.
Yeah.
Whether or not women are citizens of this country. Mm-hmm. Once you say women are unfit to make decisions about their own body.
Yeah.
You know, women are inherently incapable of making sound moral decisions. So the government has to make them for us.
Mm. Mm.
Well, that's like saying my daughter's not fully human.
I know.
My daughter is not a full citizen of this country because the government has deemed her unfit to govern her own body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people sort of miss that part of the debate,
right,
that there's a fundamental component of this that says women are less than human.
Yeah.
And that is not going to work for me with my child.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. You know, as when you look at that little, like you said, you look at these sweet, innocent little babes, and they're just little roly-poly balls of potential. Like, they're just nothing but potential. Like, you could cure cancer. You could, you know, send us to Mars. You could be president. You could, you know, end world hunger. Like, every child can be anything.
Right.
And the idea that somebody would say, oh, but you can't do any of that because you're a girl. I just see red. That does not work for me.
Yeah.
So that is my really long-winded way of saying that is why I started the page in the first place, is because I thought that this religion, you know, secularism has to prevail.
Yeah.
Wow. And so that was my focus for a long time. And then, like I said, I started to become disenchanted with the movement, but I still think that secularism is one of the most noble pursuits, you know, for, in terms of, you know, political activism and change, is probably could be one of the most meaningful and impactful things, is to just get religion out of the public sphere.
So true. I'm with you. I mean, and we see little glimpses of hope, you know, like last election cycle, right? We had like a huge number of women that were voted in, you know, minority women, LGBTQ women, and we had at least one, maybe more than one representative, or someone, maybe a state representative, you know, who was outwardly atheist, and was elected to office. So I feel like there, like the world is a changing, albeit slower than we would like to see it, and it kind of, though, it brings me to this question of, I have this ongoing debate with a friend of mine about whether or not we should allow people, not allow people, not, that's a too strong of a word, but like encourage people to leave religion, right? Like, what's our role as atheists, as agnostics, right, living in this world today, especially as women, right? What's our role in changing the society that's patriarchal and misogynistic in nature, right? Not only for our women and our daughters and our granddaughters, and to teach our sons and our grandsons, right, a different way to treat women and respect women. So, like, what's your opinion as far as our role as activists in the world in which we live today?
With respect to your question about leaving religion,
mm-hmm.
I personally would tread very carefully there, because I've never done it. But okay, I have talked to so many people, and especially women, who have left the evangelical church, the fundamentalist mm-hmm. church, and it has been devastating for them,
yeah.
That who lost family, who lost all their friends, were excommunicated from their church, were,
right.
all the friend, all their whole entire social circle was people who were in their church. And as soon as they left their church, they would have nothing to do with them anymore. And most of them say, you can't unring a bell. You either believe or you don't. Once you realize you don't believe,
right,
then, that's a conundrum.
Yeah.
I would defer that to, I would defer that to other women who have left situations like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to say, you should just get out of that church, because there's so many other tendrils. But I certainly would want to, if a woman said, I have these questions, mm-hmm. I would certainly encourage the questions, and I would answer them honestly as I could.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, leaving the, especially a fundamentalist situation, is a lot like leaving an abusive partner.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
It's not easy as just, we'll just leave.
Exactly.
So, you have to take so many of those other things into account.
Right.
But I do think that as mothers, as parents, teaching our children a different way, a better way, is a really big part of our responsibility. Mm-hmm. I think parenting is its own form of activism.
Yeah.
When you can try to undo the harms that you grew up with,
mm-hmm.
And teach your daughters that, no, you don't have to submit, and teach your sons that, no, you aren't actually the center of the universe. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, as you're raising your child, Tracy, your daughter, what are some of the things that you actively participate in to teach her some of these concepts and some of these foundational ideas about being a woman in the society in which we live?
Well, my husband he considers himself Christian, although he probably hasn't been inside of church except to go to somebody's wedding for 25 years. but he believes and he considers himself Christian. So, when my daughter was really little and she would ask questions, they would say, well, some people believe this and some people believe this. And if she said, well, what do you believe? I would say, this is what I believe and this is what Daddy believes.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look into your heart and decide what you believe.
Mm.
And so and I always, you know, I promised myself and her, I'll always answer her questions honestly. So if she wanted to know, you know, what about this? That doesn't make sense to me. Well, you're right. That doesn't make sense. Well, how do we find evidence for that? Or what's a different way to look at that? And it was probably 3 years ago when she announced to me that she didn't believe in God. And most people would have thought I'd be really happy, but it actually really stressed me out.
Oh.
Because I was so afraid that she was saying it because she thought that's what I wanted her to
be. Right, yeah.
And, you know, while I obviously would prefer her to not be a believer, I wanted her to do that for her own reasons and not because she felt like that's what was expected of her or because she felt like that was a way to get my, you know, that because it was a way to make me happy.
Gotcha.
And so for, I pressed her about it for a long time until finally one day she got really irritated with me and said, I'm not stupid. I can make up my own mind and I don't do everything just to please you. I can make my own decisions. And, okay.
Woohoo. So, I like the way she thinks.
Yes, she is very strong-willed and she knows her own heart. And she also is LGBT. She is, and has started to hear things, you know, when she plays video games, you know, multiplayer and, with that somebody said something about, you know, people shouldn't be gay because, you know, it's in the Bible that people shouldn't be gay. And, she thinks that's just the most outrageous thing she's ever heard because why does it matter if people are gay? It doesn't say anything about what kind of person they are. It doesn't say anything about what's in their heart, and what matters is what kind of people they are. So why should anybody care if they're gay? What a stupid thing for somebody to get upset about.
Wow.
And so she's not because of anything I've said, but because of things that she has learned from peers, the connection between anti-LGBT hostility and religion. So that has sort of solidified her opposition.
Wow.
To religion, because she thinks that's just all a bunch of hokum. Why should you teach people to hate anybody just because of who they love?
Who they love. That's great. And through all this, how has your husband responded?
He's pretty good, and he's, you know, I've never stopped him from taking her to church. I've always said, if you want to take her, there's a nice little, and I'm sure everybody who goes, we live in a small town, I'm sure everybody who goes to that little church at the end of the road is lovely, and
right,
it's a pretty little, you know, historic church. But he'd have to get up early on Sunday in order to do that. And, you know, do we really want to do that? Or do we all just want to sleep in and then hang out in our PJs as a family, you know?
So he's
taken most of it in stride, and she's, you know, she's accepting of what he believes. She doesn't give him a hard time or get after him about it. And, you know, I think tempered what I have said, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
In terms of being critical of, you know, religion as an institution, I've been a lot more careful about that. Because I want to be respectful of his beliefs. And, so I think we've done a pretty good job of keeping things balanced.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's beautiful. I mean, it gives her just such a great perspective, you know, to see that he's a nice, beautiful person, you know, with religion, and you're a nice, beautiful person without religion. And it's a really good example for her.
And, you know, like her, my mother and his mother, both believe in God. Hmm. And she likes the idea, you know, she has told me, you know, I think it's a really nice idea. Like my stepfather passed away a few years ago. And she said, you know, I like the idea of him, you know, being in heaven somewhere looking down at us.
Yeah.
I don't think he probably isn't, but she said, but that's a really nice idea. Mm-hmm. I like that idea. And I think that that's really sweet that,
yeah.
you know, she can appreciate that that's part of the appeal of religion.
Right.
Is that you don't lose your loved ones and that they're still
yeah.
connected to you in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like she kind of allows herself the comfort of it without mm-hmm. taking it too seriously. I'm not sure if that makes sense. But
oh, yeah. That was a difficult piece for me, I know, giving up the heaven idea. And I know.
Well, yeah, you know, I've heard other people, other religious people or formerly religious
uh-huh.
people say the same thing, that something that was really difficult was that they felt like they had to grieve their loved ones
yeah.
all over again.
Right, right. Yeah.
So that I can imagine that had to be really hard.
Yeah, yeah. And yet when you think long and hard about the theology of heaven, you know, there's something in the Bible that says, you know, there will be no sorrow in heaven. And so, you know, if you're up there and you have a child who is an unbeliever, you know, or not saved, and you know that they're not saved, and you believe in the theology of hell as well, you know, like it's like you, it just doesn't quite square, you know, either they're like, if the theology of hell is real, then there really can't be a heaven where you can feel no sorrow, because you're going to have loved ones that will eventually end up in hell, you know. And yeah, it took me a while to work through it. I mean, my dad died maybe, I think it was like 7 years ago, and I was very close to him, and he was a believer, and I held on to that hope, you know, for a short time that I would be able to see him again. And during my deconstruction process, that was a big piece of it, you know, letting go of those dreams that I'd be able to hold him and hug him and love him and kiss him and, you know, listen to him talk to me and say my name, you know. So I can completely understand the notion that heaven is a beautiful idea, you know, for
mm-hmm.
sure, for sure. And so how about your relationship, Tracy, with your husband? Like, do you guys have any deep theological discussions, or are you guys pretty much just respect where each other is and kind of let it go?
Yeah, we do. He says prayers every Sunday night.
Aww.
Before getting a bed. He actually gets on his knees and put, you know, just like the pictures, just like the paintings of the little children, you know. He and I know that in his way he's saying, you know, I want to take care of my family, and mm-hmm. I want my parents to be healthy, and I want everybody that I love to be happy and healthy.
Yeah.
And I can't begrudge anybody that, you know, for expressing a desire, you know, for their loved ones to be safe and happy. You know, it's like my mom is Catholic, and she went for many, many years without going to church at all. And then after my stepfather passed away 6 years ago, she started going back mm-hmm. to church.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really talk to her about the whole, like, you know, really the Catholic Church,
yeah.
the sex abuse.
Right, right.
But this is what I grew up with. It's the ritual. It's comforting. Yeah. The liturgy is comforting. The church is pretty. You know, it's just for her, it's like, this is what I grew up with, and this is what comforts me.
Yeah, and what she needs right now at this stage of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
And she says she always prays for me. And so you know, I'm not sure I should tell you that. You'll think it's stupid. And I said,
aww.
I don't think it's stupid. I think it's precious. And
yeah.
you are expressing your love for me. in that way. And I don't, you know, that kind of thing really doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody in an online argument says, "Oh, I'll pray for you," or "Oh, I'm so sorry you're bitter," you know, I'll pray that God saves you, or whatever, you know, you can tell when it's just somebody rubbing your face, you know, just when they don't really, when it's concern trolling.
Yeah, right.
But you know, when somebody who knows you, who cares about you, says you'll be in my prayers, well, that's their way of saying, I hope that you're okay.
Yeah.
And I can't begrudge anybody that.
No, yeah. I mean, I want to get to that place in my journey, you know, and I have hopes that I will. And I think it's interesting, you know, because I have a lot of trauma associated with my years in religion, you know, and I was a prayer warrior, and there's a lot of difficult pieces of my story that either didn't work out the way I hoped they would, or for people in my life or whatever, you know. And so I gave a lot of time and energy to prayer, and it ended up, you know, meaningless, you know. And and so for me right now, I'm a little pissy when people say, "Oh, I'm gonna pray for you." You know, I don't necessarily voice my pissiness. I don't necessarily say like, "Oh my gosh, it's not doing any good," you know, but I feel that in my heart, you know. And but I feel like as I continue to heal and deconstruct and work my way through the trauma, that I will be able to get to a place where you're at, where I find that, like, for example, one of my cousins today is undergoing a very serious surgical procedure for cancer. And he made it out of surgery, and he's gonna probably be okay, you know, but everyone's talking about, you know, praying for him, and the more prayers we have, the better. And that's just really hard for me to wrap my brain around and to like support, you know. And that, so like, I kind of have to say things like, "Oh, I'll be holding you close to my heart," you know, when in all reality, that's kind of what prayers are, right? Is like holding the ones that we love and care about close to our heart, and wanting a good outcome for them. So I'm hopeful that I'm going to be able to move past my pissiness and my anger and get to a place where I feel more at ease with people in my life who say they're praying for me, you know. So that's,
well, I would say, based on, you know, what you've been through, you're allowed that pissiness.
Yeah.
Like, because prayer for you comes with a whole different set of baggage than it comes with for me.
Yeah,
true. You know, I don't hold myself out as like an example. And I certainly, when there's like a mass shooting and people say, "Oh, I'm praying for the," well, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
you're praying for the survivors. Why didn't you pray for there to not be a mass shooting in the first place?
Right.
You know, and what the fuck good are your prayers
when
those people are going to put their children in a box in the ground?
Wow.
Your prayers are worthless. You know what I mean? Like, so I totally get it. And like I said, I don't hold myself. It's just, you know, for when it's somebody who's close to me and I know that that's what they're trying to express.
Yeah.
Then I can accept that.
Yeah.
Good. But yeah, I think when you have been through the, especially if it's people around you who know about your journey.
Right.
And are saying that around you and knowing that it comes with some, you know, some additional baggage for you.
Right.
So it's a different story. I don't want you to think that I'm judging.
No, I don't think that at all. I appreciate so much hearing other stories like your own. You know, I think so often us deconverts can kind of stay in our own little bubbles, you know, and can kind of forget that there's other people out there that we can learn from and heed wisdom from. And I mean, so I think it's refreshing, you know, for me to be able to hear from someone who doesn't have the baggage necessarily and the trauma associated with their thinking, because it kind of brings a new perspective, you know, a fresh set of eyes to look on the situation and be able to be like, okay, that's for me, I think that's a good goal that I can look forward to in my future. You know, like I don't want to be an angry, pissy person, you know. I mean, especially when it's directed toward people whom I love that I know care about me deeply, you know. So 8 or 9 years ago, when you first started your page, right, your daughter was 2 or 3 at the time, and you wanted to kind of just express the belief that secularism was kind of good for society. Like, were there any societal issues happening at the time that were kind of your impetus, or that reminded you that this was something that you felt like you needed to fight for and wanted to fight for?
I think, you know, the anti-abortion rights argument, because that just never seems to go away, it is a real big one. And anti-gay discrimination is another big one, you know, that was pre same-sex marriage. And not that I had any inkling that my toddler, you know, because that's not relevant at that age, but and just I think the idea that good policy and good decisions are based on good information. You know, false beliefs lead to bad choices. And there's just so much bad policy in the world. And there was also just a feeling that I cannot allow this world as it is to be the world that my child inherits. It has to be better. And what can I, you know, what do I think needs to change in order for it to be better? And that really felt like a big one. When you think about, and you know, the sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church, and really every church, you know, you look at the Mormon Church,
Oh my gosh, yeah. Southern Baptist Church. Yeah, you name it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's sex abuse of children is rampant, because people are told that you can't, you know, this man, and it usually is a man, is in a position of authority, and he's holy, and he's infallible, and he's devoted his life to God, which by default means he is morally superior, and so we will give him unfettered access to our children. And that has turned out to not be good for children. And then the process of not only what the children go through when they're exploited, but then having their parents don't believe them, the church doesn't believe them, the church fights them, they have to hide it. You know, it just there's just so there's so many things to choose from that institutional religion just felt like this is the thing that needs change. And you know, my ideal, and I don't know that this is, I don't think civilization has enough time for this process to play out, but is, you know, when I say I want religion, all religion to die, I never mean that I want religion to be outlawed. I want it to die a natural death. And it's that starts with secularism, by getting all religion out of public policy everywhere. So then, so that limits church, you know, religion's influence, and especially in schools. Kids aren't getting religious instruction in school. They aren't being indoctrinated in school. If they go to church, they go to church, and that's completely separate. The laws that govern their lives and their families aren't affected by any of that And then as the religion's influence wanes in that way, then people start asking more and more questions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And eventually it just withers and dies on the vine.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the long game. And it starts with secularism.
Yeah.
That has to be where it starts.
Yeah. And it's happening. I mean, people are leaving the church in droves, right? I mean, the latest Pew Research study shows this rapid decline in the number of Christians and a rising number of the nuns, right? N-O-N-E-S. So it's happening, and not necessarily as quickly as you and I and others in the secular movement would like it to, but I agree. It's happening. And I'm just looking at the time, Miss Tracy, and it's 8:30 and you need to go.
Oh, so, my goodness.
I know. How did that time
flew by?
I know. So I will be in touch to schedule our next meeting to continue the conversation.
And that would be great.
And just leaving today, if you'd like to kind of give a way for our listeners to get in touch with you, if they'd like to do so.
Sure. I am on Facebook. I'm the Godless Mama on Facebook. And I do have a website, a blog, which is godlessmama.com. I have not written in about a year and a half. And I keep saying I'm going to write something else. And I keep not doing it for a number of reasons. But I think partly because current events.
Yeah.
Lately,
no explanation
makes me, like,
needed.
I have to immerse myself in it too much to write about it.
Yeah.
And I haven't quite had the stomach for it. Yeah. But I am there. But probably the best place is Facebook.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Well, young lady, I look forward to talking to you again in the near future and continuing the conversation.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure.
All right. You have a good evening, and I'll be in touch.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time.